This is In the Loop. I'm Patrick Smith, in for Sasha Ann Simons. You might remember Fight for 15, a national campaign to raise the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. Here in Chicago, we reached that rate in 2021, and it's gone up each year since. This year, the rate in the city is up to $17.05 an hour, but it's less than that for tipped workers. For servers, bartenders, everyone who earns tips, their minimum wage is just under $13 an hour. That so-called sub-minimum wage was supposed to go away, and employees would earn the full minimum wage whether they get gratuities or not. But after pushback from some in the business community and aldermen, the city council reached a compromise deal, and now the tipped minimum wage won't be phased out until 2030 at the earliest. It's a lot, but we're gonna get into it. Here to discuss, Robert Bruno, professor and director of the Labor Education Program at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Professor, thanks for being here.
Thanks. Good morning, Pete.
Reagan Draper, organizer with the Chicago Hospitality Accountability and Advocacy Database Project, also a bartender at Consignment Lounge in Logan Square. Welcome, Reagan.
Thank you so much.
And Pete Turnes, owner of Bungalow by Middlebrow, a Logan Square pizzeria. Pete, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Reagan, first, I tried to give a summary of where we're at with so-called sub-minimum wage. How'd I do?
You did great.
Okay.
That's exactly what's happening right
now. I feel like it's a lot to understand, even though it's a basic issue of how much people get paid.
Yeah.
How do you, when we see changes in the minimum wage or the minimum wage, the sub-minimum wage for tipped workers, how do you help people understand what changes they're going to see or not going to see on their paychecks?
So a lot of our work is just helping people understand how to read their pay stubs, to help them understand that they have the right to their pay stubs. We've been hearing a lot from workers lately that they don't even receive pay stubs, so it's hard for them to track what they're making.
Okay.
I think the thing to understand about the minimum wage or the sub-minimum wage is this is just a baseline labor protection. Mm-hmm. If we didn't have a minimum wage or it was lower, workers would be paid less. So it's really important not only that the minimum wage keeps increasing so that the baseline of protection for workers increase, but that workers are aware of what it is and when the changes are implemented.
So help me understand, because, you know, we hear about this. There's a minimum wage for workers, and then there's a different minimum wage if you earn tips.
Yeah.
And this has been an issue that obviously there's been a lot of fighting over it at the city council and lobbying back and forth. Mm-hmm. You know, my impression is that if you're a server or a bartender, you make way more than minimum wage once you factor in tips. Why is it important that we get why is it important that we get the same minimum wage for all workers?
Yeah, well, we often center the conversation around the highest earners in the industry, which is often servers and bartenders. But who else is earning a tip is often our bussers and our bar backs, and they often aren't making as much as bartenders and servers. And those high-earning bartenders and servers are in the most popular areas of Chicago. Those are your bartenders working in downtown, working in Logan Square, but the bartenders working on the south side or the far north side aren't making that same amount. And so this argument is important because it's about leveling the playing field for all workers and not just centering the conversation around who's making that $50 an hour, because everybody isn't making that $50 an hour, and it's about protecting the people who are making the less.
So, and as I worked in the dish tank and as a busboy, I never got my way all the way up to server. but you're saying there are workers like busboys who are getting a share of tips so they can be paid that lower number, that almost $13 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times where they're not making it up to the standard minimum wage.
Or they're making just the minimum wage. Mm. The tipped minimum wage, I think, is just like you said, just under $13 an hour. Oftentimes, I mean, every establishment is different, but oftentimes your busser and your server might both be making that just under $13 an hour. But because the server gets a larger portion of the tips, they might go up to $20 an hour, $30 an hour, or more, depending on the establishment. And the busser and the server assistant, the bar back, often sits around that minimum wage. So they're just getting that $17, $18 an hour, even with tips.
Pete, how does this, the minimum wage and the lower minimum wage for tip workers, how does it affect your business in Logan Square?
Oh, man. I would say when we opened in 2019, we set out, I mean, really, I think maybe the way we think about this most, or where it comes up most, is the disparity between front of house pay and back of house pay, which is quite large. Quite large at the hourly level, a little less large if you look at the year, but at the hourly level, it's quite large. And we wanted to do something about that.
Yeah.
And we tried to. Go ahead.
Let me ask, just for folks who don't know, probably most people are, front of house, servers, sure. the host, and like bartenders, right? And then back of house dishwashers and cooks?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's an easy way to think about it. There could be a few other, categories of worker in each bucket. But yeah.
And so how did you try to address that disparity you were seeing?
Back then we had a small service charge. This is before the era of service charges really reigned, but a tiny service charge, and that helped us pay a little bit of healthcare premiums for certain workers, managers, where we could afford it, and helped us give an extra little, I guess what we called it back then, unwisely, was a little tip. It was just a little bonus to back of house workers, pro rata based on the hours they worked in a pay period.
Okay.
It was great. It was great to be able to do something. Then COVID hit a year after we opened, and everything kind of changed, and it still has, that said, it still has really, the conversation around this stuff really does often center on how to address that disparity.
What has that been like? I mean, now you've got the service, you call it a service charge? Is that what's the term of art? I feel like when those first started being introduced, I remember stories about how do diners feel about this. How do diners feel about it? It seems like they are a lot more standard now.
Yeah, you know, when they first were introduced, everybody had like a lot of extra money in their pocket, I think. It was like the era of free COVID money. And so you probably didn't notice it. A lot of people didn't notice it or say anything about it. And maybe a year and a half in, you started, like, I think a Reddit thread came out and Eater was publishing articles about this, and the Trib even wrote about it.
Yeah. Okay.
And there was a lot of pushback. And, you know, in some cases, rightfully so. In other cases, I think it was a little bit misguided, the pushback. Of course, I'm biased. But yeah, they're a lot more standard now. I think there's a lot more transparency about them up front. So diners are less shocked. They're more accustomed to them. So we have a note. The host says something. The server tends to say something. It's on our menu in two different places, at the bottom and the top. It's on the check. Then we say it once more before we deliver the check and try to be really transparent about it. That helps a little bit.
We talked to, you know, a fellow Logan Square pizza maker, Derek Tun, owner of the pizzeria Pauly G's in Logan Square in Wicker Park. Mm-hmm. He uses a service charge, too, that is split across workers in addition to paying that untipped minimum wage. Here he is explaining how it works.
The service charge is split evenly across the staff that worked that day. So, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a dishwasher or a busser or a pizza maker or a bartender, you're getting an equal share of the tips across the board. I think it's given us probably one of the most stable back of houses ever. You know, we have staff members that have been in our kitchen for a very long time because the service fee really generates enough money for them to live a comfortable life.
Okay, Pete, it sounds like that is a little different from how you do things, but a similar philosophy.
Similar. Yeah, very similar. Ultimately, it does raise back house wages pretty significantly, really meaningfully. Everyone's service charge and I'm friends with a lot of restaurant owners in the Logan Square neighborhood enough to know a little bit about what they do, and everything is a little different everywhere.
Right. Because you're trying to find the best formula there. Professor Bruno, we've been talking a lot about restaurants and kitchens specifically, but let's broaden this a little bit. The minimum wage went up in Chicago and Cook County on July 1st. For Chicago, it's $17.05 an hour. How does increasing the minimum wage, how does that big picture affect our economy and employment in the city?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. And it's really wonderful to sit with my colleagues here and hear them talk about the experiences in the field. Well, what we know from hundreds and hundreds of minimum wage studies, and there's probably been no labor policy that's been more studied. We have more data on this particular policy than probably any other. And what we know is that the employment effect largely statistically is zero, meaning that you will see in some targeted areas, particularly in restaurants, you will see some reduction in the number of poorly paid jobs or jobs that are below what the increased minimum wage is going to be. But then you see an increase in the number of jobs above that minimum wage. And so the employment effect, frankly, is, again, statistically zero. In fact, while Chicago incrementally was raising their minimum wage, you saw employment growth. Now, of course, we had COVID, and that changed things quite a bit. But still, after COVID, the recouping of jobs, for example, in leisure, hospitality, in food service, have grown back those jobs while wages have increased for workers, and we're talking about in Chicago when the minimum wage was previously raised, I'm not talking about the most recent, we're talking about over 100,000 workers in the city essentially got pay increases somewhere around $3,600, $3,700. So the employment effect really is negative, but positive in the sense that it actually creates better paying jobs for workers working in industries in which tips are paid.
So, okay, I know this might be me asking you to explain economics 101, but why would it be, if we're losing workers at the lowest, you know, the lowest pay threshold, why are we seeing jobs with better pay?
So what we end up seeing is not fewer workers. Mm-hmm. What you see is fewer workers who are being paid below the increased rate. Mm-hmm. So they're still in the industry,
right?
But they're now earning above that pay, and there are pay bands right above the minimum. So if, say, the minimum is 15, or here in Chicago it's 17 plus, you then have a pay band a little bit above that and a little bit above that, and you see some positive growth of jobs in those areas. So people can choose to walk away from a poorly paid job and take a better paying job. The net effect is largely zero, except that workers are earning higher wages, and that has the effect of making them stronger consumers, so they're less house poor, right? And they're putting money into the economy, which can funnel back to Pete's wonderful business in terms of maintaining, you know, customers coming to the store.
Pete, at Middlebrow, you know, because what the professor is saying is not often the message we hear from business owners. At Middlebrow, I don't believe you're paying anyone the minimum wage, but does it affect you when the minimum wage goes up? Do you feel, you know, constraints on your budget? I know the margins at a restaurant are not huge.
Well, it does. We charge a service charge, and then distribute that money to staff, and in some cases to staff that's making the tipped minimum wage. So when the tipped minimum wage goes up, it impacts our bottom line for sure. And I think, you know, in one given year, we may just absorb that and see less profit. Another given year, we may raise prices. And then in some third year, we may do 50-50, you know, only raise prices 50% to cover it, right? You can't just sort of react all the time. So yeah, it impacts us for sure. It'll either cause an increase in prices or, you know, or a lower bottom line for us. And, you know, when we can absorb it, we're very happy to. And when we can't, we don't. And then we look to the customers, hopefully, you know, we kind of hope and pray, to borrow a phrase, every day, every year, that customers will come back again this year, and we'll be as busy as we were the prior year, and we can live another year.
So considering the way that tip minimum wage affects you, were you glad to see this phasing out pushed back to 2030 or 2033?
God, no.
No? I mean, why not?
You know, I'm so tired of the instability. You know, I want to budget the next. I mean, honestly, the first year I was open, I probably would have been stoked, because it would have, you know, I was like, man, are we going to even break even this year? You know, how are we going to make it to next year? But, you know, we've found a way. We had some serious loss years during COVID, and we've had some profitable years, and we're maybe just about to earn back the money it costs us to open. And we've been going for 15 years as a brewery and as a restaurant, you know? So yeah, all that's to say, you know, now I can budget out 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. And I would love to be able to do that. And I just can't. Mm-hmm. And I'm really tired of it. I mean, there's federal issues, there's state issues, local issues. And I would love it if it was just clear, you know.
Professor, you wanted to get in there.
Yeah. You know, again, and it's so valuable for me to listen to Pete's experiences. But as he was talking, it reminded me that when Chicago's minimum wage went from roughly $8 and something to $12 something, studies were done. We looked at the impact, and the percentage raise for workers, essentially their pay went up about 45% over those years. And there was a small increase in prices in the restaurant industry. That is true. However, it was only slightly more than lots of other places that saw no change in their minimum wage. And when the public is asked, would they be willing to pay 1% more, maybe 2% more, around 2% to make sure that workers are earning a livable wage. And by the way, we could talk about whether this minimum wage is actually a livable wage. It's way below what really is a livable wage. But nonetheless, what the public says is overwhelmingly, yeah, they would be willing to pay that extra amount, that little bit of extra amount. And maybe that's why the service charge has become somewhat normalized, particularly if customers believe you're spreading that out to better pay your workers and to secure workers and have them there.
Reagan, let's talk about this living wage. Is $17.05 an hour, or just below 13 plus tips, is that a living wage in Chicago?
Well, the increase was 45 cents, and I don't think anyone is going to say that 45 cents is enough of a raise. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology produced a wage calculator that put Chicago at about $26 an hour to make a living wage, but that's with no kids, and that's assuming that your employer covers health insurance. So if I have kids or I have to cover my own health insurance, it's actually looking more like $30 to $35 an hour. So $17.05 is not anywhere close to $30, $35 an hour.
Professor, I want to ask, though, okay, because I'm hearing, the perspectives here, $26 an hour for a living wage, but I'm also hearing Pete say, if the raise in 2019 could have really hurt us and we're just now paying off what it cost to open the business 15 years ago. These two things, $26 an hour and 15 years to pay off your upfront costs, it doesn't seem like we can make that work. What is the answer here to make it so that you could have a thriving restaurant industry and people who make a living wage?
Well, I think we start with employers like Pete, who wants to do well by his workers and his customers and have a productive business that's good for Chicago. And that's the kind of attitude that we need to have. We work with and having people like Reagan who are out in the field making sure that workers aren't being exploited. That's a good place to start. What I can tell you, being the academic in the room, is that when we've looked at places like San Francisco and Seattle that have higher minimum wages than Chicago, upwards of $20, something maybe a bit closer to the MIT calculation. Let's keep in mind that at $15 an hour, working 52 weeks pretty much full time, you're around $30,000, $31,000. Okay, that's what you're earning, right? But what we know from studies that have been done in places that have had higher minimum wages in Chicago is that the businesses did well. The businesses did well. The businesses did adjust. Employment did not go down. They maintained a vibrant, if you will, restaurant food service industry. Now, that's controlling for lots of other business decisions and other things that might be happening, in the economy. But there's reason to believe that we can do better than what we're currently doing, and certainly thinking about incrementally raising the wage is probably a smart, reasonable practice to help businesses adjust. Certainly getting rid of the sub-minimum wage. It's long overdue. It has a racist history. No worker should have to depend on a livable wage on making sure that the customer likes them or feels well-treated. We don't ask firefighters to do that. We don't ask auto workers. We don't ask professors. Well, I guess our students do rate us, so maybe maybe that's a little bit of difference. But we can learn from all of this research, and I think there is certainly room to certainly do what Chicago does, and that is at least peg the minimum wage to some kind of standard. Historically, well, not historically, but in most recent times, a lot of economists have said at least two-thirds of the median wage, at least two-thirds. And I think Chicago at $17.05 is about two-thirds of the median wage for the state of Illinois.
Okay.
Yeah.
Reagan, we only have about 30 seconds left here, but as a union member, I want to give workers the last word here. All right, so we just saw the raise of $17.05. We know it's 2030 or 2033 to see the phase out of the lower minimum wage. Does that mean the fight is over? I mean, it's just sort of like we're waiting for 2030, or what are you pushing for right now?
Absolutely not. The wait is not over. We're always advocating for workers, to receive more. One of the things I do want to highlight as we're having this conversation about sharing tips across front and back of the house, I think it's really important to address the discrepancies in pay. When we are sharing tips in front and back of the house, the front of house needs to be making the minimum wage in order for tips to be shared across front and back legally. So I think that's just important to put out there so that folks are aware of what their rights are.
That is Reagan Draper, organizer with the Chicago Hospitality Accountability and Advocacy Database Project and a bartender at Consignment Lounge. Robert Bruno, professor and director of the Labor Education Program at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Pete Turnes, owner of Bungalow by Middlebrow. Thank you all for being here. It was a great conversation.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.